Lunch with Leon is brought to you by Total Care, the UK experts in lifting and testing equipment for commercial vehicle workshops. Visit totalcare.co.uk and learn about their market-leading mobile column lifts, fixed post lifts, brake testers, inspection pits, and more. Total Care, lifting business one vehicle at a time.
So here's something new. Today's Lunch with Leon really was lunch, and it really was face-to-face. I was with my friend Andy Graham. No, not the Scottish footballer, but the internationally recognised expert on intelligent transport systems, decarbonisation and road space management, as well as a huge knowledge on a wide range of subjects, including science fiction, classic British television, and really the history of technology and communications. We had our lunch at Brooklyn's Museum, indeed specifically in the London Bus Museum, after having a stroll around the site itself. I think if we'd recorded all of our time together that day, we would have been able to have made four programmes. So maybe that's a sign for another lunch. So Andy, we're here at Brooklyn's Museum. In fact, we're in the boardroom of the London Bus Museum. And I guess one of the things that troubles me is that we're surrounded by all these wonderful, lovely old vehicles and aircraft and other vehicles and cars and so on. But this is the last time we're going to be able to use them, isn't it? Because with the change to zero emission, with the connectivity, with all that stuff, are we the last generation to ever enjoy driving these old vehicles, do you reckon?
Well, I certainly hope not, and I'm working very hard to try and come up with solutions to just that challenge. So a few things. You know, we thought at one stage, the turn of the last century, that horses and manure would be the problem in London. So we got rid of horses and we have internal combustion engines. But we still have horses as a pleasure, as a mode of transport. And then we moved away from steam engines in the late 60s, but we still have those on heritage railways. And we moved away from piston engines, but we still have those at Biggin Hill, thank goodness, and Merlin's. So what I'm working on is a way that we can use connectivity of something that we all have as a mobile phone to inform other vehicles, which could in the future be self-driving cars, that there's something slow and something that can't brake very well. And I've been testing it out on a Model T Ford. I think it's the oldest connected car in Britain, if not Europe. Model T Ford, obviously black, difficult to see. So I think we can have a future where all these wonderful vehicles, the buses that I've seen today, and I've been really impressed by what you've done in refreshing the museum, it looks really good, can live with future vehicles. And we don't need to ban internal combustion engines, because most of them do very few miles, they're very well maintained, in the same way as we don't ban steam engines and we don't ban horses. And I think it's just a case of getting that balance right, and I think there's a hell of a lot to learn by having the skills in place to keep these things running, and also to educate new people. And we've seen some kids with big smiles on their faces learning how to drive buses down in your new museum about transport and about the profession of transport. And I really think it would be a shame if we said, we're just going to draw the line under classic cars. Classic car industry in the UK is worth a fortune, not least of which in terms of keeping them going. I think it would be a great shame if you weren't able to take your buses out and drive them around and show people what travel was in the 60s and 50s and 40s and 30s and even before that. And I think it'd be a great shame. There's a lot of motorbikes here, a lot of old motorbikes, and I know a lot of people get great pleasure from that. And they don't do a huge amount of miles. Their impact on the environment's really small, and it'd be a great shame to lose those. So I'd like to work against that plan. I can see that there'll be pressure on it. But equally, many of the people that have got older vehicles also have a brand new electric car. They seem to be quite aware of that. Electric cars are quite some of the very nice things to drive, very economic, very financially worthwhile if you're self-employed. And so I think that balance will come. One of the challenges is things like moving from E5 to E10 petrol. We need to make sure that there's still the right petrol for older vehicles. But we've had that before with four-star. All of this is doable. So I'm reasonably comfortable this isn't the end.
Well, I think that's really good to know, because it would be awful if we were the last generation. But we're very innovative, aren't we? And we think of ways out of these problems. And in the same way, London Transport Museum is working hard to be able to run the 1938 tube stocks on the underground network, despite
progressive automation and in-cab signalling and so on. And it's an industry, it's just an industry that's worth so much money. It's our innovation, it's our skills, young people learning how to do things that otherwise you just wouldn't get the chance to do now. So I mean, I think there's everything to play for. And I'm always reminded, and I've said this before on my programme, there's a great Chinese saying which broadly says the answers to our troubles of today are contained in our history. That's to say, we've been round this loop several times before. Exactly. So you can't throw away the history, because if there's no corporate memory, if there's no history, then you haven't learnt anything, which would be terrible.
Well, it's interesting you talk about solving problems. We're sitting here at Brooklands. My father used to work about 300 yards from here, working on this lovely aeroplane called Concorde, of which there is one 200 yards from where we are. And that had so many problems to solve. All right, it never had quite the business case, but in terms of engineering excellence and in terms of innovation, in terms of solving what looked like really, really difficult problems, just put some brain power at it and we'll come out with it. And I think that's the solution. But we've got to get young people interested in putting their effort and learning and education to do that. So STEM is really important. But I also think getting apprentices, people who can do the physical work, is really important as well. And one of the good things about Brooklands, if you do come here, is you can learn how to bend metal, and you can learn how to sew Victorian linen on aeroplanes, but you can also learn about carbon fibre and Kevlar and 3D printing. It's all good stuff.
It is.
And kids of any ages.
Yeah, for sure. And in fact, anything other than teaching kids by looking at their iPad and just watching somebody else do it on YouTube.
Yeah.
At places like at Brooklands and in the other places that you and I support, getting people to do these things for real and see them for real is no substitute.
And also smell them. We were sitting in various buses earlier on, saying how evocative this smell that you don't get anymore is of the 1960s and 70s and 80s. And the touch, the feel of a banquette bench, you don't get that anymore. And I think it's really important that people realise how transport works. So in your lovely museum, you've got a British European Airways bus that used to take people to Heathrow, and you've got some route masters that used to have trailer fulls of luggage from the West London Air Terminal. All this was when we had a nicely integrated, Britain rules the world in terms of aeroplanes and in terms of transport. And indeed, some of the aeroplanes that they flew are in the park here at Brooklands.
And we talk now, don't we, about sustainability. But some of this stuff is still roadworthy and airworthy 70, 80, 90 years since it was built. So don't people lecture me about sustainability. We built things that lasted so long that, in fact, in terms of use of precious metals or the use of steel or aluminium or whatever, we didn't need to worry too much about recycling, because it's still doing its original job 50, 60, 70, 80 years later.
Well, exactly. And the B-52 bomber is a good example of that. The American Air Force is just going to go through, I believe, a series of re-engineering it. And at the end of that period, when they finally come out of service, some of them will be 80 years old. They'll be flown by not the sons of the original pilots, but the grandsons and granddaughters of the original pilots.
And somebody reminded me recently, talking about, you know, how long things have to last, that the new aircraft carriers, the Queen Elizabeth and the Prince of Wales, the last captain of the Prince of Wales before it's scrapped has only just been born.
Yeah.
So there is so that has to be future-proofed for 40 years downstream.
And I think one of the really interesting things is much of the stuff that's around us is fixable with a spanner, a half-inch width spanner, or a 10mm spanner for some of the usual stuff. Don't get me wrong, there's some exceptionally good skills here, but most of it is fixable. When you get to software that's in some of the newer vehicles, my passion is Formula One. If you have a Formula One car that's more than about 10 years old, you have to keep the laptop that was current with that laptop with that Formula One in order to start the thing.
Is that right?
So Ferrari are buying up old laptops off eBay because you need one that ran that particular software. And I think that's going to be the challenge for keeping particularly cars in the last 10 years going, is not going to be the mechanicals, because many of those problems have gone, rust and so on, but just the software's not supported anymore. And we're starting to see that now with cars that originally had 3G connectivity, and 3G is going to be turned off, so they won't be connected anymore. We'll just have to replace them with a mobile phone. But these are going to be the problems. It's not going to be rust, and it's not going to be rot, and it's not going to be all those sort of typical classic car problems. There'll be, well, we haven't got the right software anymore.
Mm. So you've already said that we're going to be able to run our old vehicles, because in an increasingly connected world, we're going to be able to fit them with a box that allows them to be connected, even if that's a box that we've bolted on as opposed to had when it's new. And I've always been interested on the connected and autonomous vehicles thing. So firstly, people forget the word connected when they're talking about autonomous vehicles.
Yes, connected and autonomous.
Yes.
Bodie and Doyle.
Yes, yes. So we must talk about connected. And that's the reason why automation, people think of it like going decimal, like overnight we'll just change from one thing to the other. But actually, we've got progressive automation now in automotive, haven't we? And you buy a new car today and it's got reverse parking assist, it's got 360 cameras, it's got dynamic cruise control, it's got automatic emergency braking. We are progressively taking the load off the driver and giving it to the system. So it's not just a case of one day in the future everything will be hands-free, hands-off. Actually, we're just progressively getting there. The job is, the workload of the driver is getting progressively lighter.
Exactly. And so there's a couple of things to think about. One is aviation's been doing that for years. The VC-10s that were built here in 1960-something had a blind landing, automatic landing system, first in the world in 1960-something. Mm. The issues of aviation now are keeping the pilots occupied and keeping them trained for when things do occur. And I think that would be a real challenge for automotive, because in aviation, your pilots have several million pounds worth of training and they go in the simulator and they've got various backups and typically 30,000 feet when something's going wrong. When you're driving along on the M6 and automation wants to give it back to you, there's a challenge there. But you're right, it will come by layer by layer by layer. I think what we need to think about is that much of the autonomy you get at the moment, as you said, is built into the car. When we start getting the car connected to other things and starting to make more decisions, that's when it becomes very interesting. And one of the things that it will need to connect to is the infrastructure at the side of the road, but also to other vehicles. And I don't just mean other connected cars, as we said earlier. And this is one of the things I'm quite excited about in terms of looking out the window at the buses, is we've got this bus open data standard, which is starting to excite people about that being an example of buses in the UK.
Yeah, and we're ahead of the world on that, aren't we?
Well, I was talking to some Americans the other day and they said, oh, is there any chance of getting a feed of some buses locations from the UK, from England? And I said, well, you can have them all, because they're all available through an API on the site. They're updated every 20, 30 seconds. Some of them have got occupancy data. And they said, oh, we were thinking of just one city. And I said, well, you know, you can have the lot. And as a traffic engineer, I've been excited by it, because it's a way to do bus priority. It's a way to measure congestion for buses. And it's been put together very quickly. And I think DfT needs to have, be applauded for it, for doing some world-leading stuff. I think it's a bit of a undersung Cinderella project, because, well, buses and tracking data aren't as sexy as a self-driving nuclear-powered car, are they? But I think there's some really good, exciting stuff we can do there. And I think that shows the way of the future is get everything connected, in this case by some legislation, get everything reporting where it is. Buses, for things like apps to tell you whether your bus is late, great. But also we can start doing it for things like signal prioritisation, checking timetables that work, looking at fleet optimization, all those kind of stuff. It's a really good big data problem. And this is the sort of thing that will get young people interested, because it's a real knotty data problem. But actually, they can see some benefit, because they're helping the environment, they're helping traffic and all that kind of stuff. It's a really good, doable project.
Yeah, and I've been thinking of it like this, and I first started thinking about this when I saw the visualization of the traffic modeling for the Olympics in 2012. Because we were able to show graphically the progress of Olympic vehicles, little cubes of
cubes,
vehicles,
yes.
Of how much faster they were moving through the traffic than the regular stuff, as a result of all of the measures which were in place. And then I was really starting to think that we have sort of traditionally in transport, in whichever world, planning, which is undertaken as a result of data and stuff. And then it gets, so we model it, and then we actually deliver it, and things behave more or less like we planned it, that in turn generates data which gets fed back into the planning cycle again. So it's continually calibrating itself. But in the connected and autonomous vehicle space, wouldn't it be great if the plan and the execution was the same thing? We planned it to be like this, and that's what the instructions said.
Exactly.
So it actually behaved just like the plan.
Exactly. And also the fact that your feedback would be so much quicker, in that if it wasn't going to plan, then you'd know about it in near real time and you could fix it, rather than we've taken last month's data and we found there's a problem and we'll analyze that next week, sort of stuff.
So dynamic bus scheduling, where literally the system is telling the driver, or indeed the driver's on board automation, go faster, go slower, stop, wait, go there, do that, instantaneously.
Yeah.
And because it would know everything, wouldn't it? It knew what happened yesterday, last week, last month, this time last year, the last time it rained.
The football match has gone into extra time.
Yeah.
We don't need all those services just yet.
So for me, that's what BODS has really got the chance for us to have, is that what effectively is a sort of closed loop, like your central heating, which is full of components and is very long. We've got the chance to make this loop really very small and very fast.
Yes, exactly. And I think BODS, it's good it starts with a B at the start of the alphabet. I think there's a whole load of open data services about, well, Street Manager you could call Roadworks open data. You could call traffic congestion data. You could have a whole load of open data services that people, businesses, app developers could use and weave them and merge them together so that you've got traffic and buses and weather and all sorts of stuff. And for me, that's the way that government does stuff that only government should do. I think Margaret Thatcher said that many years ago. You make sure the data is there, make sure it's in the right standard and the quality, and then other people do interesting, exciting stuff with it and bring the innovation from the private sector. And it's funny, you were talking about buses. You know, one of the things we've been working on is a system called Glossa, which is Green Light Optimum Speed Advisory. And it tells you what speed to travel at in order to go through when the signal will be next green.
So my old friend Matt Ginsberg did that in America at Connected Signals Inc.
So we've been taking data out of Manchester Signals system from TFGM and putting it into a head unit in an old car, a 10-year-old car, and it tells you to that you've got 10 seconds worth of green to go. And do you say, well, whoopee-doo, what's the benefit of that? Well, imagine you're a 38-ton truck and you're going up a slip road, and Highways England have shown some really good benefits of that, because knowing that you don't need to stop and then go down through every gear and wait for 12 seconds and then go back up again saves you a few pennies worth of diesel. It also saves you some road wear, some noise, and all that stuff that mean people don't want regional distribution centres by them.
And there's also a safety improvement, because people aren't rushing for a green light they're not going to make.
So this is something that we've enabled with a mobile phone, but you could build it into a bus, you could build it into a car, you could build it into a truck. And all of these little bits added together, I think, are going to make some quite substantial changes. Because if you imagine, not every truck that goes up a motorway slip road can go through a green. Not every truck that goes up a motorway slip road would be equipped. But do you imagine how many trucks go up motorway slip roads every day? Big hauliers would like that as a business case, because it will save them money.
Now, Matt was interesting, because when he came to see me when I was at TfL, he still laughs about this. Of course, I sent him away, because the last thing I wanted was more traffic through more junctions. Because the mayor's policy, of course, was to have less traffic going through junctions. So Matt still calls it, when Matt was on the circuit, he would always call it out about how you come to London. It was the only transport agency in the world that was interested in slowing the traffic down rather than speeding it up. But in fact, traffic signals are not really the mechanism by which you have political influence over road traffic. In the current climate, it's saving energy.
Well, imagine you're an electric vehicle and you don't have to go down and slow down and then build up again. You carry on with your kinetic energy. You don't have that little bit of electricity lost as heat.
No.
So you get more range. You don't wear out your tyres in slowing down. One of the things I was surprised about is how much electric vehicles wear out tyres.
Yes, well, partially because they deliver so much torque so quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah, you jump on the loud pedal on an electric vehicle, even at 50, and you'll be at 90 before you know where you are.
Yes, it's a bit like Star Trek, isn't it? Engage, But also in wearing out tyres, they put particulates into the air and all that kind of stuff. What they don't do is put any brake dust out, because they typically don't use brakes, they use the engines themselves. But also they can generate noise, and I'm just really intrigued by news in the last few days that traffic noise has been linked to dementia. I don't know if you've seen that.
Right.
No. And you start thinking, well, you know, so, you know, perhaps if we can keep traffic moving more steadily and slowly, we don't get that noise of trucks slowing down and breaking up again. And I was talking to someone who works in building services, and I said, why do we have so much air conditioning? And he said, well, because you can't open the windows because there's too much traffic noise. And I thought, that's a big system of systems thing. Get rid of traffic noise. Windows can be opened, national ventilation, all that stuff. And of course, we in transport never think about the buildings that are around. And, you know, we never go outside our little transport world. And I think that's one of my real passions, is to try and get people who sit in building design and architecture and so on to talk to one another, because otherwise we'll be always looking at each other and saying, well, that's your problem.
No, and indeed, in a forum that you'll be familiar with, the idea that some transport solutions need to be designed into buildings and planning areas. I mean, we have constantly complained that both business, retail, and also domestic planning takes no account of the transport provision adequately.
Yeah.
And of course, people are having to do so now because of the need for electric charging and so on. But the public transport penetration of some of these places has been dire.
Yeah.
Because transport was never considered. And one of the places it has been most obvious in the UK is that as smaller hospitals have been consolidated into much bigger hospitals, which by definition are large and on large pieces of land and have been put fairly close to major arterial roads, you are caught in public transport planning terms with the need to service the hospital against the disbenefits to the through passengers who have to come off the main road to find the minor road in order to find their way around the hospital private road system and come back out again. So what was really required was some thought about public transport provision and indeed private transport provision
exactly.
to those sorts of venues long before it came off the drawing board.
And now we've got with parking being one of the largest generators of revenue in hospitals, because it's relatively easy to do. But also, I'm struck by the hospital local to me, which has obviously got an A&E department, and you've got ambulances coming in through congested traffic. Well, surely that's not what we want. So again, this kind of bigger picture of planning and how it all fits together is really interesting.
I know.
Leon Daniels is talking to Andy Graham, an international expert on a wide range of automotive, communication, technology and other subjects. This is Lunch with Leon.
So that forum I was talking about was the Rhys Jeffries Road Fund.
Indeed.
Where you and I are both trustees. I was nearly the newest trustee, but I'm now the second newest trustee. And we did just meet over this past week. And so one of the great things that's coming up now for Rhys Jeffries is this fabulous competition to celebrate our 150th anniversary, which is just really exciting. Prizes up to and including £150,000 for innovative proposals, suggestions, that as part of the plan, you don't just fill in a form. If you want to enter this competition, you can sing it, you can dance it, you can make poetry out of it, or make it out of papier-mâché.
Yeah.
We don't mind. What we're looking for is the idea, isn't it?
Indeed. So I have been judge on many competitions, and I read people's proposals for funding, and I'm fed up of the six-page PowerPoint with a block diagram of how it all works. I run a Christmas quiz every year, and one of the prizes is for the quality of the creativity of the presentation. And over the years, I've had things like top trumps cards. I've had London Underground style map drawn of the answers. I've had all sorts of things. And recently, I had a teletext page with the answers on. So I've got some this passion for doing things differently. So if you wanted to do a video, if you want to do a simulation, if you want to do something that's different, if you want to do a song or something, particularly for the schools, we don't just want this to be about STEM. We'd like it to be for drama and dance, and you could even make a cake or something. But particularly for those SMEs, those people in industry, those people in academia, please don't just start with a PowerPoint deck and start writing slides. We want something that can excite people outside of our industry, particularly in terms of the theme of the enjoyment of highways and streets and roads. Rhys Jeffries paid for about 60 lay-bys around the country, which are at places where there is a view. And there's one at top of Reigate Hill. And as the plaque says, for the enjoyment of this view. What we want to do is resonate with that. I'm particularly a petrol head, as Leon knows. I would like to see ideas from the automotive industry about how we can enjoy motoring in this decarbonised world. But what we don't want is the same old stuff of a lovely little PowerPoint deck. The other thing that we're really, really keen on is the idea that this should be something that will convince the general public. So it's got to be a sensible idea, not something that won't resonate with their views and their likes, but also something that can be accepted by, like me, a middle-aged petrol head, but also is also equally acceptable to someone who cares from the environment because they're coming at it from a different perspective. Similarly, we've got a whole range of judges. So Leon's obviously got a very strong bus background. I'm automotive and connectivity. We've got Glenn Lyons, who's professor at UWE. He's got a very strong view about future mobility. We've got a whole host of other judges who've got a wide range. So we would encourage a wide range of submissions, a wide range of entries. The other thing is you don't have to fill out a huge, great 27-page document like you might have done for other competitions. At this stage, we're looking for just things to get through to the next stage, and when we will fund those ideas that we like to go to a full stage of development. But we're also really encouraging schools and universities, schools of all ages, because as we said earlier on, we're really keen that people get interested in this. And just to emphasise, it's not just about a STEM project of building a Lego model of a bus interchange. It could be something very, very different. Steve Gooding is a fellow trustee, and I have been starting making limericks of all things, but we won't go into that.
So the question for a prize of up to £150,000, what is your vision of the way in which our roads, that's motorways, highways, streets and footways, could best work for us all as we square up to the challenges of the next 50 years? And whether you're a young person, whether you're a seasoned professional, whether you're just an interested party, you are really encouraged and welcome to join this competition, which has recently been launched. Go across to reesejeffries.co.uk, which is the website where all the details are. We are, Andy, aren't we? We're looking forward to a whole load of really exciting entries for this. The prize money is really good. And where does this prize money come from? Well, for those who don't know, and it's again available on the website, when William Rees-Jeffries died, he left a legacy, and that legacy has continued to be invested. So he was born 150 years ago. The charity continues to invest that money wisely. We provide money for bursaries, young people doing MSc transport projects. We use it for people who've got interesting research projects that they're trying to fund. It's all about the enjoyment of using the highway. Yeah. Whether you're a pedestrian, whether you're a cyclist, whether you're a petrol head, whether you're a bus driver, it's about something we almost never talk about, Andy, do we? Enjoying the roads.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is interesting, and Chris Bure and Matthew Niblett were on the programme a couple of episodes ago, about how transport seems to have got itself into something that should be avoided at all possible. You know, it's miserable, you need to do it quickly, you need to get it out of the way. And what Rees-Jeffries done is just remind us that travel is meant to be fun.
Exactly.
For me, when I go on holiday, for me, the fun starts as I leave home, the journey to the airport.
Exactly.
Believe it or not, I quite like the process through the airport. I rather like the excitement of the noise of the engines on takeoff.
Yeah.
And I don't think of the journey as being a necessary evil so as I can get to the beach. I think of the journey as part of it. And I think it's become very easy to marginalise transport, a bit like taking medicine, which is something if you want to get better, you're going to have some horrible medicine. I don't think travel has to be horrible medicine.
No. And I think you think about we've had a lot of emphasis on mental health recently. People are going for a drive in the way that they go for a walk or they go for a cycle ride. And also, one of the things that Rees-Jeffries has funded is a lot of parking spaces where, okay, the view isn't particularly good, but if you put your walking boots on or you get on your mountain bike, it is good. So it's a means to an end. And I think the other thing about future of travel is that, as you say, it's become very industrialised. It's got to be so totally optimised. But equally, we've got a whole host of places like the Northwest 500 in Scotland, these tourist routes that are emerging, where they're there for the beauty of the drive. And I'd like some thinking in our competition about how do we have those in a decarbonised future, because there ain't that many electric charging points up that way yet. And that would be an interesting challenge.
No, for sure. I mean, it's easy to get fixated on the future. And the trouble when you ever talk about transport in the future is people want to draw bubbles which are levitating one person, two person vehicles of some sort.
Exactly.
It's the sort of thing we used to get in the boys' annual.
The Eagle,
as the comet.
The cutaway of the future, yes.
Indeed. And it's easy to get sidetracked on that, but there are lots of other ways of enjoying our wonderful transport system other than just being in a snazzy people pod, because you can ride in one of those Terminal 5. There's no restriction to this competition. All ideas are absolutely welcome. In fact, the more offbeat and the more unusual they are, the more excited we are.
One of the things we've always said about Rhys Jeffries is that we would fund projects that nobody else would fund because they were risky or they were out there. We've funded some of the early work looking at letting verges grow at the side of the road. We've seen the benefits of that this summer. We've funded work looking at litter picking before that was on the agenda. We've done a load of work recently on what the impacts of ageing will be on drivers' perceptions and drivers' reaction times. And you start thinking about how this could all be fed into the future agenda. So I really encourage you, don't think, oh God, they'll never fund that because it's too wacky or too adventurous. As long as you think that it's doable and as long as you can explain it in a way that will engage with other people, please put it in.
Yeah, and I think, and just to reassure people that the judges are at the extreme and adventurous and wacky end of the scale too.
I think so, yeah.
Certainly we'll be involved if we're involved in it, Andy.
Yeah. I don't be afraid that your judges don't also understand the problems, because I think we've got a wide range of people with a lot of experience in all forms of transport. So you don't need to spend too much time explaining the problem, but please focus on a way of selling us creatively the solution that you've got. And just think about how you might want to explain that to somebody who wasn't a vehicle engineer or a roads engineer. Think about how to sell that to the wider public, because I think that's one of the things that in our industry we're not particularly good at. We do things that are full of acronyms. We have cars that have 500-page instruction books that nobody reads. And we wonder why people don't understand some of the schemes that we do, because we don't explain it to them very well. So you're equally welcome to enter if you're a communications professional or in the media and you've got an idea but you think it can be explained better, as if you're an automotive engineer and have got some really interesting widget that will make transport of the future very engaging.
We're really excited about it, Andy, and I'm looking forward to seeing the entries. So there's your opportunity. Please, as I say, go across to the rhysjeffries.co.uk website, where we have all of the details. And this is your chance to get some money, win some money for your school or for your community or for your organisation, one way or another of funding interesting and exciting projects. And in the current climate, isn't it interesting to find an organisation that is offering to provide some money? Because actually there are plenty of cases at the moment where there are too many people chasing too little money.
Indeed, and
we can take all that back to William Rhys Jeffries himself, who was absolutely dedicated, committed to making sure that people could enjoy the road network in the United Kingdom. So there we are.
Well, it's just interesting, isn't it? We're in Brooklands. There's so much history here. There's old cars, there's motorbikes, there's aeroplanes.
There's us.
And a load of lovely buses.
And us.
Us relics. Yeah. And I think it's really, really important that we keep these sort of places going. I know they're run by volunteers. I know they've had some good publicity on the TV recently for Brooklands. But if you haven't been to Brooklands and you haven't particularly been to Lyon's Bus Museum, I would recommend it. It's been very much refreshed over the COVID period. It used to be a little bit of a maze. Now it's very much engaging about London's buses. And while you're here, you can go and have a look at Concord and various other things and hear about the history of what was the world's fastest racing track in 1907. And the lap record is still held by a car that sits here. And there's a beautiful picture of it. It's a Napier, and it's got all four wheels off the ground doing 107 miles an hour, driven by a man called John Cobb. And if you want to really distill yourself on motoring, transport, aviation and bus history, then Brooklands in Surrey is a place to come. And you can get here by bus and train.
You can. It's absolutely sustainable. So, Andy, that's been fabulous. So not only has it been great to have Andy Graham as my guest at Lunch with Leon, it marks a return to having these lunches in person.
Indeed.
Because we really have had lunch.
Here's the crisps.
That's it. We really have had lunch. This has been a real lunch with Leon, a lunch in three dimensions.
Indeed.
Which brings to a close, hopefully, more than a year of Zoomed lunches, which are never quite so convincing. So today, we truly have had lunch. So it has been Lunch with Leon, which is an ITTHub.net production. Please go across to our website. You'll see the news channel. You'll see details of this and other podcasts and lots more information across there as well. I've had a really great time having Andy down here at Brooklands today and look forward to seeing you again very soon.
Thank you.
Lunch with Leon is brought to you by ITT Hub. Check out all the latest industry news at itthub.net. And don't forget to put in your diary our next great live industry show at Farnborough International on the 11th and 12th of May 2022.